Welcome back to Blotter Briefs, Teehee Briefs, quick takes on true crime that might save you some deliberation. Today's topic is an Oscar-nominated live-action short film that raises all the larger questions about whether you should watch it. Counselors in my chambers for... Detainment. The Crime, adapted slightly from Wikipedia. James Patrick Bulger, and I'm actually not sure if this is pronounced Bulger or Bulger. I'm going with the Whitey Bulger pronunciation. James Patrick Bulger was a not-quite-three-year-old from Kirkby, Merseyside, England, who was abducted, tortured, and killed by two 10-year-olds, Robert Thompson and John Venables. Bulger was led away from the New Strand Shopping Center by the boys, as his mother had taken her eyes off of him momentarily. His mutilated body was found on a railway line 2.5 miles away in Walton, Liverpool, 2 days after his murder. In February of 1993, Thompson and Venables were charged with his abduction and murder. They were found guilty on November 24, 1993, making them the youngest convicted murderers in modern British history. The Bulger case preoccupied Britain and prompted widespread debate on the issue of how to handle young offenders when they are sentenced or released from custody. The story. Detainment, a 30-minute short nominated for an Academy Award this year, is based on interviews and transcripts from the case, and said case is once again preoccupying true crime consumers, not just in its own particulars, but in what it means for and says about the genre. James Bulger's mother was not consulted by the filmmakers and is firmly not about the film, to the point of gathering signatures on a petition to get its nomination for Best Live-Action Short withdrawn. Let me first talk about the film qua film, because that's what I do here. A distinction I'm at pains to make repeatedly, and which you listeners are likely sick of. I review true crime properties, not the crimes themselves. Detainment as a viewing experience is difficult and affecting. In his complete ranking of all 52 Oscar-nominated films at Slate.com, my esteemed colleague Joe Reed put Detainment at 31 on his list, saying, quote, "The film isn't overly ambitious in form, but in asking us to contemplate these children as kids and killers at once, it's sufficiently bold." That focus, not merely on the child who was killed, but on the children who killed him also, is perhaps part of the objection to Detainment. And perhaps that's what I found challenging about the short, the meta conversation around it. Maybe it's that the boys are right around my nephew's age, and that age, there's something about it. I believe the filmmakers referred to this at one point, obliquely, that 10 years old really lines up all the keyholes and lets you see down the whole hallway of a kid's life. His babiness, his little kidness, his future 15 and 50-nesses. I also couldn't help thinking, as I did about the reenactors in Abducted in Plain Sight, as I sometimes do about child actors on SVU, and about Hallie Hirsch on that Law & Order Mothership episode Killers, as I definitely did when that JonBenet miniseries asked a Burke Ramsey-aged kid to bring down a maglite on a bewigged skull, what it must be like for these child actors to play this sort of thing. Particularly young Eli Sollin playing John Venables in Detainment. The panic, the paramount fear of displeasing mom and dad, the reflexive and poorly done lying and blaming. What were Sollin and Leon Hughes, who plays Robert, told about their real-life counterparts? What were their parents told? How did Killian Sheridan as Neil Venables, John's dad, staring into the middle distance as his son shrieks fearfully in an interrogation, battling literal and figurative nausea that is probably the only thing holding him together in the face of having raised a child who put another child's body on a train track? How does an actor prepare for that?
Do you know what truth is, John?
Yeah.
Go on. You tell us what you think truth is.
That you've done something, and it's true.
And what if you were telling lies?
I don't know.
Is telling lies wrong?
Yeah.
So if I said that your face is green and your hair is pink, would that be a lie?
Yeah.
Okay. So you know what a lie is.
It is a true story the film tells, And as I watched certain scenes, especially the baby's eye view shots as little James looked at birds and was just happy to be walking with bigger boys and wanting to please them, that hesitant pattering towards them when they've shoved him to the ground and left him, but then returned to retrieve their toy. Because they are big, so they must be good. It made my heart twist. Detainment doesn't show anything too brutal happening to James, although the repeated interactions with adults who think something's off about these two boys and a toddler, with a shiner they're towing along after them, but they don't call the police or follow the kids, it's infuriating. But the mind can fill in the gaps. And so did Google. And in James's family's case, all the horrifying gaps are already filled in. All except one. And here we are again, then, at that conversation all of us in this sector of the culture have been having with ourselves and each other, or should have been having, of late. What is owed to the victims when a piece of culture, of entertainment, is made about a crime? When we count the survivors as victims, as we must, what is our responsibility to shield them from these investigations? I don't know the answer. The cynical observation that true crime is big business is almost not worth even making out loud. But on the other hand, it's worthwhile to think about why that is. What fascinates and compels us about these stories? My theory has always been, particularly when it comes to serial killer cases, and forgive me for repeating it here, that by voraciously consuming material on Ted Bundy or Lisk or the man from the train, we are trying to convert knowledge into power, trying to control something whose chief terror rests in its uncontrollable randomness, to arm ourselves with information so that we too don't become a smiling, static yearbook photo panned over repeatedly in a limited series. Do some true crime fans glorify these killers? Sure, but for most of us, the interest is much more defensive and queasy. Cons and frauds are a different story. I can't speak for everyone, but as I've said before, my own interest in flimflam is as much in the process and success of a con as in its apprehension and punishment. And everyone loves a good non-fatal bank heist in which the motivations are plain and don't involve harming children. But the reality of a true murder tale is that the murder victim begins the story by exiting it. Murder victim stories end, and the story of finding, understanding, and bringing to justice their killers begins. And their killers are then the object and subject of the story. This merciless narrative actuality is something true crime stories should, in my opinion, always strive to acknowledge and to correct for to the extent that they can, particularly when a case's sheer volume of victims might make it seem impossible, or at least tempting to skim over them with a 4x4 layout of their pictures. And that acknowledgement is something this reviewer is always looking for. It is possible to overcorrect on that. There are a couple of podcasts I will not name, whose almost performative recentering of the victim feels so smug as to be unhelpful, and once again steers the story away from the victim, back to the self-righteously hashtagging critic. And then there's the narrative that those who loved the victims find themselves in, that they must grieve publicly and correctly, that they must become characters in someone else's investigation discovery event, that they must remember not to vanity Google themselves after two glasses of Pinot, and find themselves going mano a mano in four different subreddits with nosy strangers who don't understand that this is a person, not a case. I can't imagine what that might be like. I can't imagine the burns that glare left on the Bulger family. I don't judge James's mother for trying to slam the lid back closed on all of this. I don't think it was a realistic hope, but I also don't think it would have killed Vincent Lamb et al., if you'll excuse the phrasing, to give her and her family a heads up, even if they didn't plan to stand down, should they have asked. Detainment is heartbreaking, gut-wrenching. It's not exploiting the crime, and it's not, quote, siding with Robert and John that I can see. I can also see that anything anyone might argue about raising awareness of the bystander effect, or eulogizing James with the film, or whatever other defense of it as a worthwhile work, is the coldest of comforts to James's family. But it is a worthwhile work in the debate it's prompted, and if it makes one person more mindful of how a life taken ripples out forever, it's valuable. It's done its job. Or a job. Detainment is available on iTunes as part of the Oscar Shorts package and maybe on your cable or satellite company's on-demand channel as well. If you've got a job for me, I am here for you. Blotter Presents on social or bunting at the-blotter.com to suggest topics for Blotter Briefs, Tee Hee Briefs, or the main podcast. Thank you for listening to today's Blotter Brief. I'm your host, Sarah D. Bunting, and I am always prepared to rule.